If you want to add herbs in your daily life, you can start with about 10, and you kind of combine them with each other, and you have maybe three categories. So one is always tonifying qi. The second could be move blood, and third could be kind of cool it. So have three of each of these herbs, and plus one that like licorice root that can be used in all of the combos.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Nutri Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Tan. In this episode, I sat down with Zoe Gong, a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, registered dietitian, herbalist, and founder of Silver Root Apothecary in Shanghai. We talked about her journey from New York to Shanghai, how she's redefining TCM food therapy for the modern world, and the philosophy of food as medicine. Zoe also shares practical tips on building your own TCM pantry, creating nourishing rituals for better sleep, and how to bring more balance into your everyday life through simple, mindful eating. I know you'll love this conversation. It's full of warmth, wisdom, and everyday ways to reconnect with your body's natural rhythm. Hi, Zoe. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, everybody. So happy to be here.
Yeah, so let's dive into it right now. So Zoe, so many of our listeners know you from your New York days, right? When you became such a recognizable voice in traditional Chinese medicine, and you made it so cool, modern, and accessible. And now you've taken that even further into Silver Root Apothecary in Shanghai. Can you share what inspired that move and how your studio reflects your philosophy of food as medicine?
Sure, yeah, of course. So I moved last year, 2024, in July. And it wasn't planned, actually. So I was visiting my family in Shanghai in January. And before then, I hadn't been back for 5 years. So when I went back, I'm like, oh my God, it's great here. You know, life is comfortable, so convenient. The city is beautiful. Just before, you would see air pollution, the water tastes weird, the tap water. But now everything is just so much better. And it's just a very lovely city to live. I felt living in New York, you know, the city was never designed for its people. It's designed to make money almost. That's how I felt. But in Shanghai, the city is really designed for its people. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to move back. And when I was here, there are so many things I could learn about Chinese medicine. You know, when in New York, yes, I teach a lot. I didn't feel inspired. I didn't feel like I was learning much anymore. But here, yeah, every day there are new things, amazing practitioners I could follow. There are, you know, different kind of clinics I could go to. So I moved back. Silver Roots, I started it this year in end of June. So very soon, the idea is I just needed my own creative space. I always wanted one, even when I was in the city. But it was just too expensive to make it happen. But in China, you know, the people are very efficient. I did the whole place in less than 2 months, which is kind
of amazing.
Crazy.
Wow.
And very, you know, I didn't spend too much money on it. But it turned out really good. So the idea is, I can have a place where I consolidate all my work, workshops and content, and I host tours as well. So this will be a stop on a tour. We'll have retail and, you know, courses for basically to sell digitally, and all of these things can happen with Silver Roots.
I love that. That's amazing. So a lot of your clients that are coming to visit you, right, are they local from Shanghai? Or I know a lot of people also come visit you from around the world, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because right now, I mean, how I teach, how I market the place or my content is still mostly in English. I try to do both when I first came back. And Chinese people are actually really interested as well, especially the younger Chinese people.
Yeah, for sure.
But at this moment, it's too much work for me. Because how China works is completely different from the rest of the world. We don't use email, no website. I almost feel like I was having two companies. So then I'm like, okay, maybe I need to choose one for now. and then
Mm.
do the, you know, do both in the future. So right now, about, I would say 85 of, or even a 90% of my customers are abroad, or they're foreigners living in China, also English speaking. And then I have 10% local guests who are usually younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the space attracted a lot of people who are in the TCM business or in Chinese culture, like tea. I was just meeting a lady who was a tea master, who is a tea master. She found us through Red Note. So yeah, a lot
Yeah.
of connections are made also.
Yeah, no, that sounds amazing. And so the people that are coming to visit your studio and that you're meeting online, what are some of the common imbalances or challenges that you see that people are facing?
Yeah, you know, recently a lot of skin issues. I think skin can be pretty hard to solve, and then a lot of people are, well, Western medicine doesn't work, you know, people tend to see other options and they'll come to me. And then I also see a lot of digestive, obviously, women's health issues, respiratory, a lot, sinus problems, things like that. So kind of everything, all the common things that we know, yeah, people have, and it comes to
And
studio
then
for solutions.
what is the one thing that you sort of tell everybody, right? Because I think that a lot of it is interconnected, right? Especially in TCM. So what is that one thing that you see that it's like an overarching theme that you tell them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my approach is more food-based, food therapy. So I always invite people to look into their diet. I know a lot of people, okay, want to add herbs, they want to do those all above and beyond things, but you kind of need to look at your base diet. Are you having a lot of varieties? Are you eating seasonally? Are you having, you know, as little processed things as you can? If you can hit these basic things, honestly, you might feel very differently, but after just a month or two. And then on that, you can above and beyond can start to add herbs or even taking some formulas, and things like that. Also, I mean, mental health, wellness is very important too. A lot of people are just way too stressed. They have way too much going on for work or relationship or whatever that is. And with that, you know, if you have that, the best diet, the best lifestyle probably can't completely heal you.
Yeah, I completely hear you on that. Let's go back to sort of, food as medicine, right? I wanted to touch on your cookbook, the Five Elements Cookbook. Can you explain a little bit about the Five Elements framework for somebody who's never heard of it before? And I think that's a really good starting point for people.
Yeah, so for Five Elements, I wrote the book in 2022 and it was published 2023. And then in the book, there are three chapters. The first is a basic introduction of what TCM food therapy is. So then we talk about all the basic concepts, theories for whoever is a beginner to understand the medicine in the easy way. And then the second chapter would be 50 herbs that you can reference all the time. What do they do? Their functions, their stories also. And then the last chapter is recipes, about 60 recipes. So the book is really for whoever is interested in TCM and use it as a toolbook.
Yeah, I think that's so needed because there's so many different types of herbs in TCM. And even for somebody like myself that grew up around TCM with my grandparents, boiling the soups and the teas and taking the herbs, it's still very confusing. And I didn't realize, all the different namings, right? Like reishi
Yeah.
and lingzhi and, having to put those two together. Even, it's so sometimes like disconnected, right? And then the idea of learning about the herbs and then putting them together and understanding the synergistic effects of that. I've honestly only in these last few years really started to
you know, dive deep and like understand that better.
It's quite hard to get to all the herbs, but I think start from one or two and then gradually expand your pantry, yeah, your understanding. And that's kind of the theme of the book as well, to help you gradually try a bit more. You know, everybody learns, yeah, from one or two, three. Remember the flavors, what they do. If you only learn it from paper, it's a little difficult, in my opinion. But when you see them and you see a holistic picture of them, their historical context even, then it gets easier.
Yeah. Go back to what you said about the TCM pantry. I am still refining my TCM pantry. And it's always like, I'm like, oh, it's so messy. I'm always trying to organize. But for somebody who is like, it's their first time, they want to take the step, whether it's making a soup or a tea, how would you advise somebody to start their TCM pantry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you want to add herbs in your daily life, you can start with about 10. And you kind of combine them, you know, these 10 to be able to kind of combine with each other. And you have maybe three categories. So one is always tonifying qi. The second could be move blood. And third could be kind of cool it. So you have three of each of these herbs. And plus one that like licorice root that can be used in of the combos. So something would be, I mean, the common ones, goji berry is a must, right? Astragalus or angelica roots and longan, jujube dates, all those delicious ones, or like honeysuckle, dandelion, these cooling ones. You can kind of do your research and pick just that. And I actually recommend going to a TCM grocery store to find inspo, because then you will be finding the ones that are commonly used in cuisine. Rather than in decoction, that could be very bitter. So you do that. And then also another thing would be a multigrain blend. So you will use that for your rice or congee, or even when you're trying to do a nut milk, you could add some. It's a very important part of food therapy. Yeah, and then all the other things, all the other condiments or produce that you buy, especially meats, should all be as good quality as possible, as natural as possible, right? Because that's also the theme of
Yeah. And are you sort of, I'm a huge soup person, right? So for somebody who's busy, right, are you making soups and teas every day? Or like, how would you sort of have somebody start integrating that into their lives?
Yeah, totally. I mean, teas, I think, is very easy. I do think everybody have time for tea. All you need maximum or 5 minutes, right? All you need to do is have this blend, boil. The only difficulty for TCM teas is you kind of have to boil them. Usually they're cut bigger. The herbs are bigger than just tea leaves. So then you can invest. I recommend busy people to invest in those kind of automated tea thingy, you know, it looks like a kettle, but transparent. So put it in there even the night before. So you wake up with already made herbal teas. And then you can drink this throughout the day easily without any additional work. You can even bring it to the office. You can make a more concentrated version, bring it to the office, thing it out with warm waters all the day. And for soups, I just make it once a week. You don't have to make it every day. I just make a bigger batch and I put it in the fridge.
Okay. That's a
and
great
also,
tip.
Yeah, and that doesn't take that long either. The most annoying part for me is just straining everything out. But the adding the water, close the lid. I mean, let's see.
Yeah. Then you just wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to some of like the trends these days, right? I want to talk about intermittent fasting. I think there's like the whole camp, should you intermittent fast? What is intermittent fasting good from a TCM lens? And I know that you also have a TCM intermittent fasting guide. So that sort of would love to hear what you say on that.
Sure. I think fasting definitely have its value, you know, even from a Chinese medicine perspective. Back then, Chinese medicine was heavily associated with Taoism. So the Taoists, they love to fast. But they would do more drastic fasts, you know, in order to be one with nature, in order for their practice, for their bodies to be completely clean. They would do fasts. Usually we say they call it bi gu, avoid the grain, avoid the meal. They might do the whole day fast, or sometimes when they're not doing the drastic ones, they will do it before noon. So they don't eat anything after noon. So that is quite a... But the thing is, they wake up really early. They wake up at 4. Right? So 4 to, well, let's say 12. That's a good, 8 hours, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Intermittent fasting to me is just for a shift. The most ideal, yes, is actually during that time, right? Before sunrise and to noon. But we cannot live like this, most modern people. So we shift it a little bit. Whenever you wake up, do the intermittent fasting. It's good because it kind of gives your digestive system a reset every day. After, they kind of help it to empty out a bit. And also then we're not worried that you are not eating enough, because you can still eat plenty of foods during the eating window, which is okay based on Chinese medicine. And so the only thing that I might not like about intermittent fasting is sometimes when people are eating during the eating window, they could, if they want to do it more healthy or follow a regimen, sometimes it can be very like salad or juices or those very Western healthy stuff that could make their body too cold. Based on Chinese medicine, a lot of stress for digestion. And they're already, not eating for a long period of time. So they might feel good by the end of the fast. Because during the eating window, they have a very cold diet. Or people who binge during the eating window, they're like, oh my God, I'm going to be so hungry afterwards. I have to eat a ton. And that's also not good. It's on TCM. So yeah, but as long as you can eat normally and nourishing foods during the eating window, intermittent fasting can be really good. Because another benefit I find about it is that it gives people peace of mind, so they don't have to think about food for, when they're fasting. Because when you think too much, it hurts the spleen. And for some people, it is stressful to think about what to eat. Not everybody is a big foodie or planner when it comes to food. It just doesn't come natural for some people. And having the opportunity to not think about it actually could in turn strengthen your spleen.
Oh, interesting. I never thought about it that way. Yeah. And let's talk about, it's a big trend on TikTok, fibermaxing, right? What are your views on fiber maxing? Yeah.
Okay. I actually never heard of that trend.
So it's just eating as many vegetables and like as much fiber as possible. So it literally means adding as much fiber as possible to every meal for your for your digestive system, for your gut, and just maxing it out. Like, so what are your views on that? And how do you think it would affect your digestion and spleen?
Yeah, I mean, too much fiber probably is also not going to be too good for you. Because we've heard it all now. There's the carnivore diet where you don't have any fiber. And, those people say they don't go to bathrooms. They go to bathroom once a week or something like that because there is no fiber. And obviously you have the fiber maxing that I just heard of from you. I mean, both of these could work for some people because we're all so different. And some people, yeah, their ancestors might be more like a carnivore and some people are more like their ancestors did eat a lot of fiber. Then these two extremes can be good for them. But for a lot of us, the rest of us, it might not be the best option because they're too extreme. They're not humans kind of usually do, right? Yeah. I guess a short period of doing that could help you flush out something or change your body's habits that could encourage some positive changes or noticeable changes. I feel like you're doing something.
Yeah.
but I don't think either is good to sustain. It's not really sustainable, in my opinion, unless you put a lot of effort to it. However, I do support a lot of vegetables and fruits. I probably won't call it fiber maxing, but maximize the variety that you're having. So at least around 20 kinds of fruits and veggies a week, which is not that hard, which should be the norm. In China, a lot of people do eat like this, you know?
I've actually noticed that whenever I visit China, right, there's a lot more variety of vegetables.
Yes.
Even like the leafy green vegetables have so many different types, and the different types of mushrooms and herbs. And
yeah,
it's a lot more that, you know, I'm
for
always
sure
discovering new vegetable types.
For sure. Definitely a lot more, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the good side of our Chinese diet now. Then, you know, people add a lot of oil to it. And they saute everything with a lot of oil. But yeah, I'm glad we still have the tradition of eating a lot of varieties. Varieties, common variety is nutrients, right? Colors, different kind of antioxidants and NTCM. They tend to be more balanced because you're having more varieties. You're not just having raw leaves, or you're not just having fried things, or having a balanced, energetics of food.
Yeah, I think that's key, right? So it's really about balance.
Yeah, you know, you hit the color, five colors of the five elements.
I love that. Yes. So let's switch gears into talking about sleep. I think sleep is something that so many of us are struggling today, right? Especially with our busy lives. And I think you put it in a way that, you know, people are always on, right? They're always thinking about whether it's like, what am I doing next? Or what am I eating? Or like, how am I going to reply to my, like staring at your phone and all that stuff, right? So it's really affecting our sleep. And that's also something we're really passionate about at Nucci. So from a TCM perspective, why is sleep considered so foundational to our health?
I think also in TCM, there's body clock, right? So each hour, there are things that you're supposed to do to give your organ meridian system a rest. Just like how Western medicine says sleep is an important moment for your body to recover, set. Yeah, I mean, it's super, super important. You cannot go without it. Then the organ meridian, the body clock is not going to work without sleeping. And another thing is, I mean, if you don't sleep well, your brain doesn't get a rest and you physically feel extremely tired the second day. That's just how it is, you know, and you don't want to do that to your body. And a lot of people do have sleeping issues nowadays because of, in Chinese medicine, there are many imbalances that can lead to insomnia or waking up during a sleep or couldn't stay long in their sleep. And so then, you know, based on these different patterns, we recommend different things for patients to have a better sleep.
Yeah. Actually, when we were thinking about our sleep product at Nucci, right, we kept coming back to the idea of shun, right? It's restoring your shun, right? Your body and mind and your spirit, right? I think that that is so important. It's not just about, you know, how many hours you're sleeping, but it's that the quality, right? And then resting, being able to rest your shun to wake up refreshed and restored.
Totally. That's one of the biggest reasons why people can't sleep, is their shun is not calm or lost.
Yeah. Do you have, I mean, I think you mentioned that there are a wide variety of people that like reasons why they can't sleep. Are there certain ones that are there any patterns you're seeing with people coming to you with sleep issues, or are there certain different body constitutions that are more susceptible to things?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the common ones would be people who have a lot of liver fire, which is consistent with our lifestyle nowadays. The people with liver fire, they are busy, they get angry easy. And liver is also during our body clock. It's the time where you should be like sleeping, like 11 p.m. And but for a lot of us, we're not sleeping at that time. 11, we took our phone, scroll, and livers connect to our eyes. So then we're using our eyes, you know, on a mini tiny screen. And it can make the liver fire even worse because that's the time where it should be resting. And so liver fire is a big thing. When you're too fiery, imagine you have a fire kind of burning up. The smoke and everything, of course you can't sleep, right? There's another thing for people who are not very fiery. They could have something like heart deficiency, heart qi deficiency. Heart is definitely connect a lot, heart meridian, okay, with the sleep. So they could have worrying, or they have just constitutionally have a very weak heart qi, and they think way too much for them to fall asleep. So we need to supplement the heart qi and to anchor their spirit. Their spirit is a little like, you know, very flowy up there. So we anchor that for them to sleep. I think these two are probably the most common.
Yeah. And so for those that are struggling with trying to fall asleep, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of sleep ritual do you recommend them?
Yeah, I mean, definitely stay away from the phone is important. I would start with the idea is to train your body to tell you, from this moment on, I'm trying to sleep. So a good starter of that is could be a small cup of calming tea for them, maybe rose or lavender, calming, whatever that you prefer. And then you don't want to drink a huge amount, then you go to the bathroom, you wake up, and that's not good. You just literally need like a shot, like a, you know, just a sipping to find your body high, sleep time. And if you know that you are someone who has very fast metabolism, if you notice your blood sugar can be very low before you sleep, that could actually be the reason why you cannot sleep, because your blood sugar is very low. So you might want to put a little bit of honey in here and then drink and to raise the blood sugar a little bit. So then, and then there's so many rituals you can do. A head massage is usually a very good one to activate the meridians on your scalp around here, to relieve some stress and to get your brain, sometimes they're very tense, to kind of loosen it up a little. And then, just maybe no phone, read is a little bit better, or even not use your eyes too much. Do some self-care things. I would leave it to everyone because they're different. But never, don't do something, never like exercise at night. I wouldn't do that. I know a lot of people go to gym after work.
Yeah, it's so hard to sleep afterwards because your adrenaline is still like going, right?
Exactly. So the modern lifestyle definitely, you know, contributes to that. So no, it's not your fault. Right? That's how we live now, but you have the option to choose otherwise now that you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about staying asleep, right? I think that they're definitely and actually I belong in that camp. Like I can definitely fall asleep, but I think it's the staying asleep because I'm a light sleeper, right? It's a lot harder to sort of stay asleep or to feel like you're having that like really good sleep, right? So what are your tips on the staying asleep?
So for that part, we want to calm our spirit, anchor our spirit to supplement your kidney, your heart, then you can stay asleep longer. I think Yu Qi's formula could be really good for this type. And also in general, you want your kidney to be strong actually when you wake up, especially if you wake up to go to the bathroom. Then you want to select things that are more marrow or a bit more like sesame, those kind of thicker liquids, a bit more in your diet to supplement you. And in general, if you feel like you get scared very easy, because kidney governs like scared, right? Fear, afraid. So if you feel like that's emotion that you feel a lot, then again, you need to work on your kidney meridian, your heart meridian to calm your spirit as much as possible. I would also use things like Reishi. I would do meditation to make yourself just like very, you know, very calm, zen. What would you say for you, what is it like for you? Do you have other things that kind of, you know, like
It really begins with like if I take night calls, first of all, that like doesn't help you sleep. Mm. It doesn't put you in a very good zen state, right? So then you go to sleep because you're so tired. And then sort of like the 3 a.m. mark, you might feel like, you know, my husband might be like snoring or something, and then it wakes you up. And then you think about one thing, right? And then that one thing makes you think about another thing. And just then your mind is literally just racing, right?
Exactly.
And that's the part that's the part where you're like, I just wish when I was younger, I didn't have this problem, right? I felt like I could sleep a lot deeper. So it's like those moments where you're like, I just want something to have me stay asleep for longer, to have that quality sleep. And that's sort of, you know, one of the things that I've been working on. And also then to like take less night calls and not stare at my phone before I sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you're doing something very active, even though taking night calls is not physically active, your brain is very active. You think about what to say, you're getting a lot of information. It could be a very annoying information also. So then your spirit is not anchored, right? It's kind of doing its thing. It's, so you want to anchor that before you go to bed.
So Zoe, I know that you're a huge traveler back and forth, Shanghai, New York, and wherever else in the world you're going to, right?
Yeah.
How do you deal with jet lag? I think that's on a lot of people's minds, right? Especially on such a long flight and such a different time zone, right? How do you deal with jet lag?
That is a great question, because this time when I came back from New York City, I had the longest jet lag ever. I had a problem for 2 weeks where I had terrible sleeping schedule. I wanted to sleep every day when it was 6 p.m. I couldn't do anything. My brain just shuts down and I get up at 4, you know. I felt like I became a monk or something. But, you know, because for me, usually what I do is I keep several days. First, when we land in a country and when we come back, always a couple of days of doing nothing. So I have the time to really get the rhythm back, whether to force myself to stay awake during these hours or really try to sleep. Even when I'm not sleepy at all, I try to lay down and tell my body, okay, time to sleep. And then this way, I usually bounce back really fast. But this time, because I got really busy and I had to, you know, take some calls at different hours and I had to do this and that, and I didn't focus on handling the jet lag, and then just lasted for the longest time ever. And I was also really busy this time when I was in New York. So it really comes down to if you're willing to slow down for a couple of days to focus on the jet lag. You know, it's not about your intention. If not, then okay, there's a chance that you will feel terrible for a long time, but that's not everybody's fault. You probably didn't, you know, make an effort to do that. So yeah, jet lag is so real and it can be very annoying. Most people will be able to handle that if you give yourself a couple of days to have a very regular schedule. I'm going to Paris today, so I have some time that I haven't planned anything. I have a lot of workshops there, but I make sure for the first couple of days I don't have anything.
Yeah, that's so good. And what about from a food perspective, right? I think that when you come back, like, how do you reset your gut and how do you reset your whole body?
Yeah, totally. If you are traveling between places where you have a very different diet, I would actually recommend a little bit of fasting, like the intermittent fasting. I like to do my own plan, actually, for just 1 or 2 days to reset. And if you can kind of keep having your routine, your body learns that, knowing, okay, reset, I'm going back to whatever times I'm used to, and then do it that way. That's what I prefer. But let's say you're not kind of a person who likes fasting, just eat good food, natural, you know, easier to digest, because the body is, you're already really confused with the timing. So try to have things like more soupy, steamed, very cooked, and try not to have caffeine. I do find that mess things up, at least for me. Even when you're trying to stay awake, try to use your own willpower rather than a lot of caffeine.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because you kind of don't know the dosage of it. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
It could be just a little too much, or it could be like not enough and you're still tired. So just use your willpower for the time when you're adjusting to life.
I completely agree. Thank you so much. These are such great tips for any traveler. And so I wanted to end with, you know, you've built such a strong bridge between ancient tradition with modern science and the modern lifestyle, right? Where do you see TCM food therapy heading in the next few years, especially as you mentioned, the younger generation is embracing it, right? So where do you see it heading?
Yeah, I definitely see it being a little bit more practiced or known, because, I mean, food therapy has been here for thousands of years, but it kind of disappeared for a second because it's actually a discipline that's very, I guess, difficult to make money, because it's so individualized, it's seasonal, it's changing all the time, right? So it's hard to make one product that works for everyone for all of the year. And it's actually very affordable, because you don't need much. All you need is education, and then you just need the most basic care, salary, all those produce. So I feel like that's why it disappeared for a second. But now that there are a lot of information out there, people are learning from online, different creators, different practitioners through social media, I think it's going to come back to people's life more and more. And companies, there are the companies maybe putting out more responsible products that fits the TCM principles, rather than a one pill fits all kind of diet, you know, trendy diet kind of thing. And because it works, so I know whatever that works will stay. I just hope more people start to use that. It doesn't have to be called TCM food therapy, really, because for me, it's not really just TCM. It's kind of an intuitive eating for people. We are just saying seasonal, natural, with some herbs added to it. Right, harmony, the base idea of Chinese medicine. It doesn't have to be you have to eat a Chinese diet, you have to have congee every day for it to work. So I mean, I just hope it gets more known, but I don't know where it will go, to be honest. I haven't really thought about it, but I just see a lot more interest.
Yeah, I love that. I think you put it so well, right? I think that it's not even just about TCM food therapy. It's just food therapy and good eating, good foundational eating, and how we can sort of internalize that, right? So I think that it's making it easy and making it accessible, right? So it's almost like your second nature, and embracing sort of going into like what's good food, right? Because And it makes me think back to like my New York days. I probably did like some of the worst food eating, because you're like thinking about all these different trends, right? It's like, I think when I was living in New York, it was like, I was eating all this like non-fat, like fat was the enemy at that time, right? So you're like subbing it for all this other like processed stuff that you don't realize the ingredient list is like this long, right? And I was wondering why I was still gaining weight. And it really took me coming back to Asia, like eating like the whole foods and like, you know, like less of that just like store-bought everything that has like a long ingredient list, but then it says fat-free.
Yeah, exactly. As natural as possible is always a great way to,
yeah,
a great way to go for your diet.
Yeah. Well, I love what you're doing. I think that everything that you're putting out there is making, you know, herbs, food, so much more easy to access, to understand. And I just absolutely love the work that you're doing. So for Thank all you. Our listeners that want to follow you, what is the best way to find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Zoe Xin Yi Gong, my full name. And you can also find me on website. It's the exact same thing, zoeyixinyigong.com. If you're interested in visiting Silver Root Apothecary in Shanghai, then our Instagram is Silver Root Apothecary.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I'll probably see you in Shanghai sometime.
Thank you. Yes, please come.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nutri Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.